Okay, before we get going here with our topics, which we've got two of them actually to talk about tonight, are there any questions for our people on the net? Please call. That was a rousing success. What we want to talk about tonight is we want to talk about a couple different things. First of all, Kevin, let me know that you have there were some major questions about lithium ion batteries, okay? And I did some research on that, and there is an issue with that, and then how you put out a fire for that. So I'm going to let Kevin start this thing off since he did all the research. Kevin, N7GES, go ahead.
Okay, Joe. Well, I didn't really do all the research, but I did try to confirm it. Mark reminded me that we were very remiss in making a couple of important points since we had so much discussion about lithium batteries. And one of the things we probably should have touched on a bit more is why they heat up and catch fire. There are several reasons. Certainly, isolation between cells, separators between cells is one, if it deteriorates, but drawing power from it too quickly causes resistance to go higher, which causes greater heat, and so that's a problem. Charging it incorrectly, again affects you know, how much power is going in, how much resistance, and then the continual cycle. If I've got any of this wrong, anybody else is certainly willing to, please correct me on that. So those are the two areas where I think we very commonly find problems. And the other very important thing with lithium metal batteries is to remember not to try to extinguish them with water, but to use a Class D fire extinguisher. Water interacts with the lithium, the greater amount of lithium in a lithium metal battery, and increases the flammability, and it just accelerates and gets very much out of control. So Mark suggested very highly that I make those two points regarding some of our discussion on last week's battery issue. Let me see. We are recording all of these shows, and Darren said that the first two would be going up online shortly. I'll have last week's done and this week's done shortly, and hopefully they'll be going up very, very shortly on as well. Thanks, N7GES.
Thanks for those comments, Kevin, and I want to remind everyone, if they haven't been reminded before, we are recording these for posterity, if you like, and they will be up on the website for anybody to basically pull down. I'm assuming they're coming in a WAV file or something, an MP3. Could you elaborate on that a little bit, Kevin?
They are in a fairly low bitrate MP3 file. They're very clear. They should be fairly small file size. They should play in any player, and you should be able to, depending on your player, you should be able to skip backward and forward and check the sections you want. I'm certainly open to any comments once they are posted and anybody listens to them as to what you might want to have done differently. I don't know about how the download process will work yet, just because I don't know how they're going to be set up on our server. But as soon as we know more of those answers, we'll let you know. But be looking on the website for entries linking to those files. They probably should be coming up very shortly.
If he doesn't get them up, I can put them on there. They're probably going to be just MP3 files. You'll be able to just link into it and download it. So it should be fairly straightforward, I'm hoping for that. Anyway, let's get back to our battery problem. Lithium-ion batteries, I've dealt a little bit with them, and as they're about as safe as you can get them until you do something wrong, okay? And what actually happened, there's an oil in there that is actually very, very flammable. And, of course, heat, fire, oxygen, the rest of this stuff is what you need to get a fire going. I actually teach a class. In fact, I'm going to do it, Wednesday, I believe it is, on this particular thing. Now, Devin mentioned a Class D fire extinguisher. I'm going to make this drop for a minute. Before I go on, Carrie, N0WIQ, do you have any comments about this?
Well, not really anything authoritatively, but in many cases, it's a standard battery. If you abuse it, it causes trouble. If you don't abuse it, it'll be okay.
You're absolutely right about that. It's generally more of a behavior-type based problem that you would have. Lithium-ion batteries are perfectly safe, and we're throwing the fear of God into you because they can cause something. When they overheat, they hiss, they bulge, and that's the problem. When you start bulging, you get the two cells together, and that liquid or oil actually in there actually catches on fire, and that's what actually happens. Problem with a Class D fire extinguisher is they're not cheap. The cheapest one that I've ever found for a small one was $350. And if somebody can tell me where I can get them cheaper, I'm all ears. But that's the cheapest one I've found because they're very unique in the matter that they can only put out a Class D fire. Home fire extinguisher is an ABC extinguisher. That can be used to fight a lithium battery fire. However, you need to fight that as you're not fighting the battery's fire, but you're fighting everything else that's around it. Think of a field that would catch on fire, okay, from this lithium battery. You would fight the fire in the field and not fight and let the battery just burn out. That's the only option you have. So you're basically looking at it as if it starts spreading, because it can catch things on fire. And you want to be able to make sure that everything else doesn't catch on fire. So you can actually spray around with an ABC extinguisher, and that will contain the fire in that particular area. Because remember, the fire is going to burn out the oil, and not necessarily other things are basically extinguished with an ABC dry chemical fire extinguisher. Along with that, what you need to do, if you do buy a Class D fire extinguisher, it's fought quite a bit different. And you should go through some training for that. Most of the stuff is free. But it's basically used as sprinkler overhead type situation. But remember that. Class D fires are pretty much one of the hottest fires out there. And the bad thing about Class D fires is most of the stuff, such as titanium, magnesium, and various things that cause these type of fires, create their own oxygen. So the minute you put a blanket on top of it, you burn a hole in the blanket because it can create its own oxygen. And that's the issue with a Class D fire. Andy, do you have any comments about lithium batteries? You've worked a lot with those.
Yeah. And just about everything you said, you hit the nail on the head. Very hard to put out unless you got a Class C with you. And don't let them catch fire. Watch how carefully you charge them. Make sure the charger is the correct charger for the load. And make sure it's got a monitor on them. So they're not that great. And the polymers have their own little special problems that you have to watch out for. But you know what? I stick with the old, good old deep cycle lead acid sealed. Works great for everything I want. And that's the way I'm keeping it.
Hey, Bill, you always got a comment about something. Tell me everything you know about lithium batteries.
I haven't heard anybody say anything wrong yet.
You certainly can add to the conversation.
Well, I just know one thing. Lithium batteries can be very dangerous, so just pay attention to what you're doing, and you shouldn't have any trouble. Keep them away from fires, and keep fires away from them, and keep them contained in the units they're supposed to be in, and if you have to take them out to do something, just make sure that you have them isolated by themselves.
And I think that's the key to everything. If you should have a fire or something like that, make sure that you keep it away from anything else that can catch on fire, because really, it's probably one of the hotter fires that are out there. Metal fires, as we call them, are really one step down from arc flashes, which is electrical fire. But they can be really, really nasty, so you need to keep them away from everything like that. And water, like I said, water can help on the outside of the thing. You're better using a dry chemical, an ABC extinguisher, to keep around it. But that's the issue with the thing, is that lithium-ion fires. Now, NiCad fires are straight out. You can use an ABC extinguisher for that. They are known, but they are quite a bit different than that. But the lithium battery is a big thing. And you got to remember, your Bofang has a lithium battery.
KE0HIM.
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, I don't know if this is 2 cents. It's probably more like one. And the thing that I know about them is, and it's just based on power drills and saws and stuff like that, the lithium batteries will go with the same power until they're dead, and then they don't just die down like a regular old, the older style batteries. They're just done. I don't know if that's a plus or a minus, you know. They don't give you no warning.
Oh, and I guess I've used them with drill twos, but you use them every day, and I use them occasionally every day. So basically, they got a full charge until they just drop out, huh?
Personally, don't have any. But my roommate here has them, and they have a little power indicator on the drill or whatever to show you how much is left. But even if it's down in, say it goes down into yellow, that thing will keep on running and keep on running, and it's just done. It won't just slow down. It'll just quit.
Has anybody ever had that issue with a radio?
Well, yes, the Bofang radio will work until the voltage drops down to about 7 volts, and then the radio will just plain shut off. But anyway, it's like this. Those lithium-ion batteries will maintain the potential and deliver the current. So they are delivering a consistent power level until they run down, where the lead-acid batteries will gradually lose potential as well as being able to deliver current. So that's the difference.
This is KE0 Echo Lima Kilo, Tom. When I went elk hunting last year, was my first experience with the radio with the Bofang. I noticed that when it lost power, even though when I left, it looked good. And when it rolled over real quick, like Kerry was saying, it just falls off. So I learned real quick that after that to always keep a spare radio battery with me, because you never know when it's going to do that. So that's that.
Much better, Tom. Thanks so much for coming back with that. Anybody else like to comment?
KE0ABV.
Go ahead, Rhodes. This is a mess with this repeater. Go ahead.
No, a couple comments. Actually, everything I've heard sounds great. I've either agree with everything that's been said or learned a few things. I actually sell lithium batteries for a living, for mainly solar homes and things like that. And what a lot of people don't realize, there's actually 6 different types of lithium batteries out there. The one that's made the news mostly is lithium cobalt oxide. That's the one where you have the self-sustaining fire and plasma and all kinds of bad stuff if you have a thermal overrun. The batteries that I carry at work are actually lithium iron phosphate, definitely the safest of all the lithium chemistries out there. Catastrophic failure with lithium iron phosphate is just venting steam. And continuing on that, you know, the fires are really a cause of just overcharging the battery, which is why you really need a battery management system of some type with lithium batteries. I don't really know what they have in the smaller, you know, power tool and, you know, radio size batteries, but with our, you know, whole house size batteries, we've got a completely separate BMS system that monitors both the temperature and the state of charge on each individual cell in the pack, and has the ability to actively compensate for any cells that are getting out of parameters. And then if it can't actively compensate, it'll just shut the whole battery down as a safety measure. So there's my 2 cents or so worth on the lithium batteries. Back to net.
Thanks for that, Rob. I guess I wasn't aware that they had different types of lithium batteries. So you said that the ones that you have, of course, for solar cells, are basically the safest, defined safest.
Safest being, you know, again, in a catastrophic failure situation where it's overcharged or something like that, instead of actually getting a fire, you just get steam venting from a vent cap on the top of the cell. You have to try really hard to actually get a fire out of a lithium iron phosphate cell. There's a great website that I've used a lot for my work education called Battery University. They've got all kinds of different online class type of documents on there, and their BU-205 has a really good explanation of the different types of lithium batteries, and it'll explain, you know, the lithium cobalt and lithium iron phosphate. Those are really the two most popular categories on the market. There's four others that are either really expensive or still in the experimental stage and aren't really dominant in the marketplace right now.
Well, I'm going to assume that the ones that you carry are kind of pricey batteries, is that correct?
Pricey mainly because they are, you know, designed mostly for powering an entire house, not just a ham shack. Most recently, we installed a system, the entire battery bank was a 48-volt, 5,000-amp-hour. It had, I think, 50 or 60 usable kilowatt-hours of capacity in that battery bank.
When you have something like that, what are you, the solar cells, what are they expected to run? They can't run a house at 48 volts. What do you actually do to get to 120 volts or 220 or whatever?
There'll be an inverter of some type. There's a number of manufacturers that makes inverters for solar market that will work on either 12, 24, or 48-volt DC battery banks and then invert that into 120 or 122-40 split phase or even three-phase power.
Katie's at TYU with tonight's TechNet, sponsored by the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club. I have a question for you that a friend of mine asked, actually how we started doing this. He had a neighbor that was putting in a solar cell next door, and he said, how much is this going to interfere with my amateur radio hobby? And we had various discussions and come out to find out that they could definitely have a lot of problems on the abundance of different types of frequency out there. How do you compensate with your type of situation?
Well, I actually, first of all, KE0ABV here for ID. I actually have a solar-powered shack here at the house. I have a 12-volt AGM battery that's powering my radio right now. Then I've got a single 60-cell panel outside and a charge controller that charges the battery up during the day. And the charge controllers are known for generating some noise, and it really depends on the type of charge controller. There's two categories, the PWM or pulse width modulation charge controllers. They're the older ones that don't really have a lot of intelligence to them, and they seem to be pretty quiet. I have a PWM charge controller and really haven't noticed any noise issues at all. It's the newer ones, the MPPT or maximum power point tracking charge controllers, that are notorious for creating a lot of noise. There's a couple brands that do a lot less noise than the others, but in my personal opinion, you know, usually I'm playing radio in the evening when the sun's not shining, so I don't really need to worry about charging the battery, so I'll just turn the charge controller completely off, and noise problem taken care of.
Makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, if it's not on, it's not working, so, I mean, what difference does it make with that? But I do know that John had some issues about that, and we came up with, there was something I think you could put in line with it, and I can't remember what that was for. Kerry, do you happen to remember what that was, N0WIQ?
No, I don't truly remember, but I do know that if you put a Faraday cage around the system, less RFI comes out of it. And then you can have all kinds of digital stuff going in. Now, what was said earlier is we have a digital system for monitoring and recharging a battery, and you have an analog system for recharging a battery. And, of course, the analog system is less efficient, but is quieter. It doesn't make the sharp logic transitions that other systems do, so. Now, if they're put in a case that basically is a Faraday cage around it, then that will minimize the electromagnetic interference they will generate.
Since you do this every day, do you agree?
Most of my customers really aren't dealing with ham interference too much, but you know, I'll just repeat my opinion that when I'm actually in the shack playing radio, the sun's not shining anyway, so I just turn the charge controller off and no problem at all. But yeah, it is true, the older PWM charge controllers, they are kind of an analog charge controller, not nearly as efficient, but very little to no noise whatsoever coming from those. Again, it's the max power point tracking charge controllers, which, you know, are much more efficient as far as transferring energy from the solar panel into the battery. But there's a lot more going on inside of those, and therefore a lot more noise generation from them.
N7GES.
N7GES, you have the floor.
Hi there. Well, one of the issues we were coming up with a couple of weeks ago was the whole house solar system, it was the noise was coming, of course, from a couple of sources. It was coming from the charging, but it was also coming from the up converter. I'm not using the right term to bring the voltage to from. You know, 48 to 110, and keep the 60 hertz even. And I think part of that was the simulated square wave or sine wave versus pure sine wave generation. But also, it was coming because of all of the wiring becoming antenna. And the issue being, you know, where do you stop this signal? Because you've got wiring going in from panels, from batteries, creating antenna. You've got wiring going all through the house that can be carrying that interference if you've got a noisy circuit and that sort of thing. And I think there was at least some possibility of putting something in the circuit that would quiet that, but it was certainly not an absolute guarantee depending on the system, and it then required, of course, cooperation with the either the system installers or the people that own the systems to get that all accomplished. So I think it was a whole lot more complex than just charging the battery.
Yeah, Rhodes here again, KE0ABV. I fully believe that. Unfortunately, I'm not knowledgeable enough on what kind of interference the inverters are going to be creating. And, of course, I'm sure that's going to be brand-specific and size-specific as well. But I believe those things are a huge noise generator, but unfortunately, I'm not knowledgeable enough on those yet to really comment on how to negate that.
N0WIQ again.
Gary, if you can get through, go right ahead, sir. N0WIQ.
Well, like I said, anything that does a switching situation that makes a resemblance of a square wave, you have sharp, high-frequency edges on. And so they become very noisy. We know that from a computer sitting next to the radio. And if the computer's not in the proper case, it interferes with the radio kind of thing. And so you know that the high efficiency mechanisms are highly digital. So there are digital signals inside, and you have to keep them from radiating outside. Well, I suggest a Faraday cage, which you can make out of aluminum foil or copper foil or any number of things, but the idea is that the signals won't go beyond the Faraday cage in any significant amount. So that might be a thing to think about.
Well, we're getting slightly off the subject, and that's okay, because I think, let me go out for one more call. For anybody else have any questions about any type of battery issues or anything like that, how to put out fires or anything like that, let's make a call and see if anybody has any questions for that.
It's KE0HIM again.
Go right ahead, Rick.
Well, I don't buy Duracell batteries anymore because I've had those things, and I call it faster. They just, they swell up and they turn white and they ruin everything that they're inside. And I've only had that really with Duracell batteries. Has anybody got any reason why just a Duracell do that?
Thinner material in the outer body is about all I can say, because I have resisted Duracells for a long time, but the current issue is they have a 10-year shelf life, and that's worth something.
Well, Energizers have the same thing, and I don't think I've ever had one of them do it faster, you know, and ruin my flashlight or ruin my whatever I had it in. It's only been Duracells.
Well, Energizers used to make a big deal about their thicker skin so they wouldn't leak, period. But, like I say, the Duracell has a thinner skin so they can put more battery inside the skin. And then they have a thinner shell so they will leak in a shorter period of time. I'll put it that way.
Well, I tell you, that makes perfect sense, and I still, the only time I'll buy a Duracell is if I need batteries, and that's the only thing there. Anyway, K0HIM, thanks for that.
Are there any other questions or comments about batteries at this time?
K0OJ.
Hey, Mr. OJ, go right ahead, K0OJ.
Well, you duty, Joe. First contact on a new rig, by gum. I can do D-Star now, IC880. The voltage on a on the batteries does fall off. I've got an older VX5R that's got a voltmeter function on it that I always have turned on, and you can watch the battery go down, down, down. Now, the radios in question, all of them, are programmed to turn off when the voltage gets so low, like in my, VX5R, about 6.8 volts, and she'll turn, no, 5.9 volts, I think it is, she'll turn off, and you can't turn it on until you put new battery in. So they do fall off. Anyway, there you go, K0J. Oh, and the Baofengs, they, at least she tells you when the thing is low voltage and all that. So just thought I'd throw that in for whatever it's worth.
Well, thanks, OJ, for that. I do know that I've really never had any trouble with Baofeng, the lithium ion, until just lately. And it wasn't mine, it was actually one of the clubs. Of course, the rental was out, or lease, whatever you want to call it. And they came back and said, we just can't get anything out of this thing. And I checked this battery, and it's deader than a doornail. So we just replaced the battery with one I had, and it worked fine. But I've never seen one that went bad. But, and of course, this one is probably 2 years, maybe, old. well, maybe even less than that, but it's shot for sure, so they do come, they do go bad.
Oh, definitely they do. I have some batteries that are like 1999, 2000, you know, whatever, when I got that HT, and you can tell that they're starting to go soft because they don't charge up, well, they charge up quicker, but they don't go quite as high. So, I love the battery voltage function on that thing. I love it. So, anyway, that's the deal. I had house sat a friend's house who was not on the grid, and I hope that the inverters now, and you get the pure sine wave ones if you can, they'll be a whole lot less dirty. Man, that thing that he had was dirty. It had a great big fat bank of lead acids in it. Those things, you charge them up to 30.5 volts, and when she got down to about 20 volts, they was going to go out any time. Fire up the generator and get her charged back up. K0OJ.
KE0HIM with a question about these Bofang batteries.
KE0HIM, Rick, go right ahead.
I typically put mine on the charger just about every day because if I'm not yapping, I'm always trying to listen and see what's going on. Is that good or bad to just keep them topped off?
Somebody want to care to answer that? I just plug them in when I need them.
N0WIQ. I have a wish on Chinese radio that I have two batteries for, and I run them down, and then I charge one while I use one.
Okay, but my question is it good or bad for the battery to use it down a ways and then put it on the charger and keep it topped off, is what I'm asking.
Well, back in nickel-cadmium days, they would retain a, or make a shelf that they would run through. And you'd usually find that inconvenient at some point in time. Now, the nickel hydride or whatever they are using, I don't know about, so I'll just put that away and leave it at that.
KA0ABV with a comment.
KA0ABV, go ahead, Rhodes.
It's the case with most battery chemistries, not necessarily all of them, but definitely with the lithium family, lead acid, that the deeper you discharge a battery, the fewer cycles you're going to get in its life. Just for example, like typical lead acid batteries back in the solar home scenario, if you do a 30% depth of discharge, you can get, you know, 1,500, maybe 2,000 cycles out of it. But if you do an 80% depth of discharge, you're only going to get about 200 to 400 cycles out of it. So just sitting there on the charger, basically on a float charge, that shouldn't impact the life of the battery. But if you're, you know, discharging it all the way down to it's completely dead and then charging it up again, you're going to cut down the life expectancy of that battery.
Well, the thing about the radios, they have a cutoff area where the radio will quit working if they go any lower anyway. So they don't just completely discharge the battery.
I think my question's been answered. I like to keep my batteries up. I don't like to be cut off in mid, unless it's absolutely, you know. Anyway, I think I'm doing all right by keeping them topped off.
N7GES.
K0EDU comment.
Hang on, Mike. Let's get N7GES. Kevin, you had
something. Yeah, something. Yeah, I think you can keep it topped off, especially if you at least do use it occasionally, so that it's not sitting for, you know, months and months topped off, because, you know, lack of exercise can be a problem for him too. But the other thing is watch your battery and charger and make sure that nothing is overcharging or overheating, because these Baofengs do occasionally come out with defects. There have been people that had to replace their chargers or replace their batteries or whatnot, and so, you know, it's probably always possible for a charger to either be defective or become defective, and so, you know, make sure, you know, the charge cycle is going the amount of time it should and going off. Make sure the battery is not heating. Just keep an eye on it all the time, which is something I guess I need to do even a little better, although I do generally see them about every day or so. It might still be advisable to keep an even more observant on them, too, just because they are inexpensive, and who knows what kind of quality is really in there. N7GES.
Bob, KU0EZU, Mike, you had a comment?
I've got two chargers, two radios, and both of them work pretty good. But you may bring up a good point about keeping an eye on them, because you forget and you go to bed or something, that thing's sitting in there all night long. You don't want to wake up to a smoke-filled room and a little blaze in the middle of it. Yeah, okay, that was a good point. KE0HIM.
N0WIQ in anecdote.
Hang on just a minute. I've got a question from Mike. KE0EZU, go ahead.
KE0EZU. My ICOM 51A has a battery monitor. Battery in it, and my Baofeng has a 50-mile-hour battery scale, and I just let that one down until it stops talking. Yep. But the charger lets you know when it's fully charged. Keep an eye on the charges on that. The only thing I don't know if it's a mistake is my cell phone. That's the lithium ion. Sometimes I'll charge that overnight.
Out of the repeater, we caught about a third of that. Would you come back again?
Maybe I ought to go on my. I think I've got a better idea.
Okay, Mike, we'll wait for you then. But for that, I think we had Kerry, N0WQ, with a comment.
Where I had my Baofeng sitting in its charger, and it was saying it was charged because it had the green light on, and I had to power cycle the silly thing because I knew it was putting a dead battery in it.
Really, that's interesting. N7GES, I can confirm that as well. Sometimes the little old circuitry just doesn't quite get the message. And you know, power cycling it, especially when you know that it's not dead, can very well, very likely be necessary. I've had the same thing with my CS700 DMR radio, too. Never really had that happen with anything that I've had here. We just, except with this bad battery, we just let it cook for about an hour and a half, and it never did change. And so I let it sit for another couple hours when I was in here, just in case it would get a little smoky, and it just didn't do anything. So I'm sure the battery was shot. Just I don't really have a good way to test it. Just it won't charge.
Did you
you charge it in the same charger, or did you charge it in a different charger?
Two different chargers out here, and it did the same thing with both of them.
Yeah, well, I think you pretty well safely and accurately determined then. So, but yeah, you know, the chargers, as I read the reviews for the Baofengs, some people did get bad batteries, and some people got bad chargers, and both, and just had to replace them and stuff like that. So, you know, it happens. And so that's why it's probably a good idea to just keep an eye on them.
KE0EZU, Mike, are you back yet?
Affirmative, KE0EZU.
We can hear you really well. Go ahead with your comment.
The Baofeng and the IC51A or ID51A, they have little battery monitors on the screen, and it's a 3-bar. And I'll charge them up if I need to when it gets down to 2 bars. I don't have to do that. Sometimes we have on the net, I'll use the Baofeng or the ICOM. And if it's not fully charged, you know, it'll go down to where it's dead and I won't be able to transmit. But I can still go ahead and charge those. But when I charge them at night, I'll charge them until they say it's fully charged, and then I'll take them off the charger, unplug the charger.
We heard you good that time. Any other comments?
K1COL, comment?
K1COL, go ahead.
Hello, everybody. I just wanted to kind of point out also with those Baofeng radios, I run them off of a little solar panel and a little 12-volt battery and all that. I charge the batteries with the little charger it has off of the 12-volt solar stuff. But be aware that that's not 12 volts that's actually charging those batteries. It's like 8.4. So if you buy a little cigarette lighter type adapter, make sure you got a step down on that. That'll step it down to 8.4 volts. Otherwise, you'll overload the battery.
And WIQ with another comment.
And 0WIQ, go ahead, Gary.
Well, the situation I see is you lay one of those batteries on a shelf and just let it sit there, it will discharge. And so I put mine in a charger when the red light lights up red, so it's charging, and then the light turns to green and it's done charging, but I leave it in the charger because of the shelf life.
Well, as near as I can tell, those batteries are only 7-volt batteries anyway, aren't they?
8-volt.
That's good. Comments or questions?
WA9FBO, good evening, Joe.
Oh, good evening, Bob. Do you have any comments about our battery issues here?
Well, I've been listening since about 7:30, so I don't know what you covered in the first half. But I guess I agree with the earlier comments that the depth of discharge is important. The deeper you discharge lithium batteries, the fewer cycles you will get out of them, but it does not hurt them to be charged many times. So if you want to partially discharge it a bit, you can recharge it right back up again, and it will not suffer from the ill effects that NiCads and iron batteries and so on will have. So way different chemistry. And I'm also kind of suspicious, I guess, about the battery gauges. Because of the memory backup systems that I routinely use for microprocessors, it seems to me like most lithium batteries will maintain a constant voltage right up until the moment they die. So on a 3-volt battery, I'll get 3 volts. Then suddenly one day it's zero and all the contents of memory is gone. But you really can't tell the quality or the charge or the age of a lithium battery, it seems to me, by looking at its voltage. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Bob, for that.
Anybody else have any comments, questions about batteries or charging or how you put the fire out or whatever? Go ahead.
KE0EZU, comment?
Certainly, Mike. Go right ahead, KE0EZU.
I was wrong on the batteries. The Bofang is 7.4 and the ICOM ID51A is also 7.4 volts.
What the ICOM has got, but I do know that the Bofang is a really, let's call it inexpensive, to not coin the word cheap. But, and it is. But, I mean, it's a $20 radio plus a charger, so what else could it be but inexpensive?
No, my comment was the fact that you said it was about a 7-volt battery, and I said it was an 8. I came back saying it was an 8. But I stand corrected, it's a 7.4 for the Bofang, and also on the ICOM, IC51A is a 7.4 volt on the handy-talkie.
They will typically charge up to about 8 volts.
Affirmative.
OJ, at what point do they drop out?
Oh, I guess that depends on the programming of the radio that they're powering. My old VX5R would drop out at about 5.8 volts. And then, even if you turned it off, turned it back on, it wouldn't come back on. So you had to put in a fresh battery.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Bofangs. I think they just drop out whatever. I don't know. Does anybody know when the Bofang would drop out?
N0WIQ.
N0WIQ, go ahead, Gary.
Well, I know better on my Wushan radio. It'll drop out at 7 volts. And if I kept it at 7.1 before I go to use it, I'll change batteries. But yeah, I think the whole thing is about the same, but I won't guarantee that answer.
Kind of surprised that they last so long though. It's a really inexpensive radio, but they do seem to do a good job in that battery. I mean, we've ran it at Hamfest, and I've had a handful of backup batteries and never had to use one on anything that I've ever actually done as far as any type of event that we've run or anything. They're really a pretty fair radio for the money.
I have the Baofeng with the big 3.8 amp hour battery in it, and I've noticed as of late it will charge up in about an hour, maybe two, which indicates the battery is going south. It will not last near as long anymore. So I got to get a brand new one. That big battery in the Baofeng charger should take about 8 hours to charge, and then you can run the, at least on mine, I run it for a month.
Kind of the same way. I've got a bunch of these Bofangs because I actually bought out all that Willie had, so I've got a number of them. And so I guess I charge them when I need them. If we're going to do an event that we need it, I'll go ahead and do it. The next one I'll probably do is the Hamfest. So I got till January to charge these up. I guess that ought to give me enough time. Anybody else have any comments or questions?
K0AYJ.
Hey, another anecdote. N0WIQ.
Well, we had kind of a double there. Let's go to Andy. KE0AYJ, go ahead.
Well, needless to say, technology in batteries has made leaps and bounds and continues to do so. But count your lucky stars, because in Alaska, when solar power first got installed for me in the cabin and I put it in myself, it was very, very expensive. And I had 1,000 amp hour batteries, potash batteries, that weighed about 495 pounds apiece, and I had six of them, you know. And the charging system and converter system was a nightmare to maintain and keep running when it got 60 below. So be lucky you got your little wall warts that will charge your little lithium batteries. Be grateful for what you got now and know that things are going to be improved and get better all the time. And those days are gone, and I'm never going to look back, but I had a lot of fun doing it all.
WIU net control for this evening's TechNet. N0WIQ, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, this isn't strictly amateur radio, but it's a little bit along the same lines. I had a problem with my twisted pair coming into my house. And it was the fact that the balanced lines became unbalanced and put a hum in the receiver. The technician came out, changed twisted pairs for my home. He says, "I made it better. I don't know if I got it fixed."
Interesting. Any other comments or questions for tonight's net? Please call.
Well, when it comes to
the
times you have to say, "Oh, I made it better. Maybe it's good enough to use." But it's always that situation. I made it better, so it works for me. But hey, that's the way RFI works.
Excellent point. I think KE0EZU, I think, Mike, you doubled with Kerry there for a minute.
KE0EZU, I was just wanting to ask OJ if he's running the 880 tonight because it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's what it is. So when this is all done, I want to go play D-Star with somebody.
Well, once I get used to D-Star, I'll play with you.
Well, you need to get a hold of Gary, A0RX. He can fix you up.
That's affirmative.
Other questions or comments for the net?
KE0 Echo Lima quit. Kilo with a question.
Go ahead with the question.
Yeah, this is Tom again. You guys were talking about changing the tones on the repeaters. Have you decided when that may go on or when that's going to happen? Any date so we don't miss it? Over.
Well, Tom, you're a little bit late. We changed it about a week ago on all the stuff. On 275 got changed about a week and a half ago, even maybe 2 weeks ago. No, wait a minute. It was 3 weeks ago maybe. And the 115 actually went before that. So they're all back to a standard 100 tone.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't changed it. I'm still talking on the same one I was on over a month ago, so I know how I'm getting in. So, over.
GES.
Yeah, Tom, it could be just because you've got your receiver tone shut off, because all we did was change the receiver tone. Transmit tone was still the same. Go ahead, Kevin.
That's essentially all I was going to say. If you are hearing us, then nothing has changed. The only thing that would have affected is that you might not have been hearing us anymore, but you'd still be able to get in. So if you're still hearing us, then all is well, because it wouldn't have changed how you got into the machine.
Roger, that's what I wanted to make sure. I remember one time we were changing around, and I was wondering how I couldn't talk, and I fixed it, and I thought you guys were going to change it again. I didn't want to miss the big change, so I'm glad to hear that, and I don't ever mess with the receiver side. Thank you.
Yeah, this is KD0TYU, net control for this evening. We tried to have everybody shut them off, but there were some complications, especially with the Budweiser receiver. When you have a digital sound, sometimes you have a little bit of noise coming through if you have a digital-type repeater and an analog repeater, as in what we've got out of Budweiser, the Fusion. Then you possibly wouldn't like to have the receiver tone up. But we when we went to an analog, this particular repeater is analog, of course, we basically said, okay, fine, tell everybody to shut them off because they really don't need the receiver tone. Questions. Anybody else have any questions for tonight's net? Anything, please call. Okay, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. The net lasted 81 minutes. We had 18 check-ins that we knew of, and other people were out there. I do appreciate everybody being on the net. Make sure you come to the Wednesday night net. Again, we start that one at 6 o'clock with early check-ins and 6:30 with the actual preamble. So If not, we will see you next Monday night, and I'll come up with a subject and probably put it on the website here in the next day or two. Really haven't thought too much about it. So, thanks, everybody. Appreciate that. The repeater is open for general use. Everybody have a pleasant evening. Katie's there, TYU Claire.